a particular era in California surrounding a specific region called Imperial Valley. And the project is described this way. These Dust Bowl tonalities were assembled from public domain period recordings ranging from TV and radio broadcasts to documentary and oral history sources. This found material was then extensively reworked and manipulated before being blended with contemporary recordings of acoustic instrumentation to create a richly layered aggregate of folded time. Now, this is a beautiful project musically, and you can learn more about it at richardskeleton.net. But I think also it speaks to a very specific experience in the United States in the context of an economic crisis, the Great Depression, and particularly speaks to a point that I think is not often reflected on, which is the periods of great migration that have happened in the United States. There are many of them. And one of them, of course, is the migration of many people to coastal areas, particularly California, in the context of people looking for sustenance, looking for work, of course, but also due to the extreme economic conditions of the Depression, people moved for their economic livelihood. I think this is important and meaningful to reflect on today as we see so much criminalization of migration in the context of economic migration, which takes place across the Americas. But people are now, in the context of the Trump administration, being criminalized for migrating. So I think this work by Richard Skeleton is a chance to reflect on this time in American history, to imagine it, to think about folded time. And I would interpret that in one way as being the connection between the past and the present and how they mirror and echo each other. So here is my conversation with Richard Skeleton for Free City Radio. And I'll leave it at that. Your work travels to different environments and sonic spaces and encourages those of us being in the sounds that you're sharing to sort of visit those environments. There's obviously a tradition of this practice. Of course, you also work on music in a more sort of traditional format. So the project that I first wrote you about, the Imperial Valley Project, you know, I think it sort of visits some questions around American identity and the sort of sense of place and so a lot of the contradictions, really, because in this moment we see this very charged landscape where even like workers' struggles of the past or like experiences of like physical labor is sort of being co-opted and mixed into this corporate lexicon of an extreme right politics. And, you know, there's just so many challenges there. But I think I appreciated this project because you're going back into that space. But I feel like we actually need to do that. We need to sort of understand where these sort of national mythologies and stories are coming from. And sound, I think, does create a bit more of a reflection space that is sort of different from, like, a political essay, for example. All that to say, maybe we could just start by an introduction and talk a bit about this project to start, the Imperial Valley Project. Thank you, Richard.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you think the project speaks to that kind of big political and cultural landscape that's fulminating at the moment in America. I had no intention of ever approaching that with what I do. And it's, in a sense, Imperial Valley is quite an anomaly in my work. And I'm coming up to 20 years. Well, I'm just on 20 years now of doing this. And generally speaking, there's almost a divide in what I do between nature and culture, and I veered very much towards nature. And so in a sense, it's been about trying to build an edifice that is looking and enshrining the natural world in a way that's in and of itself, not in any kind of dialogue with what's happening to the world. I'm not like, oh, the world's dying, so we need to save it, and I'll do some art about that. It's not anything as didactic or as pointed as that. It's just been a way for me to try and find my way in the world itself, and so using whatever artistic means I have to negotiate that. And so 99% of the work that I've done has been about the landscapes that I've lived in, and that's mainly been Northern Britain. I now live in the west of Ireland, so I'm doing a lot of work about that. I spent a while living in Iceland, so that was really interesting. And I often find that when you're in another landscape, it makes you reflect back on the previous places that you've lived in, and it brings them into sharper focus. But in Imperial Valley, kind of initially started for me as a way to remember visiting America when I was just out of university, you know. And I saved up as much money as I could, got a summer job, went over to, got the plane over with a friend to Los Angeles. We drove up the coast. We did all the cheesy things. We went out to Las Vegas, and then we rented a car and drove from Las Vegas to the Grand Canyon through Zion National Park in Utah, you know. So we kind of took in a bit of the landscape, and it's that kind of had this sort of latent impression on me that you know, 30 years later, still kind of trying to grasp the difference, because the difference in geography between, say, the UK and mainland America is so incredibly different. My wife's from Thunder Bay, my wife Autumn. She's from Northern Ontario originally, and then her family moved out to British Columbia. And whenever we'd fly over to visit family in Canada, what always struck me is it'd be like an 8-9 hour flight. 3 hours of that you're over the ocean, and then the rest of it you're over the continent of North America. I mean, it's just a massive kind of geography to try and come to terms with. That sort of idea of trying to come to terms with vast expanses was something that I hadn't really done before. And I guess with Imperial Valley initially, I'm just trying to scratch that itch. And one of the first things that I do is I go and try and live in a place, and that's just not possible to kind of uproot and go and live in America, to try and sort of bed myself in and do something that I feel is authentic. And so again, Imperial Valley is quite a weird project for me in that I've never actually visited Southern California. I've been to LA and I've been to San Francisco. That's it. So I don't have a grounding in that place. But perhaps that actually freed me up to do something entirely new. And so what I started doing was looking at any kind of archival images that I could. And that's where I came across Dorothea Lange's photography. And it's probably like kind of high school teaching, all about the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and everything that went along with it, and the New Deal and so on. But for me as someone from Great Britain, never really kind of cognizant of it. So immersing myself in that, and then the power of Lange's images, and especially the faces as well, but also the landscapes that she was documenting, but the faces of people looking back at her camera, staring into the lens, were really so powerful to me that I felt like I had to do something in response. And so I kind of rather fancifully call them auditory nitrates, a kind of like a nod to the original sort of collodion process of producing photographs with that kind of silver nitrate process. And so the idea, I guess, was to maybe fill in that sonic blankness around the photographs that spoke to me really volubly, and I felt like there was some way of trying to to approach that. And this project sort of began around sort of 2020, and I can't really kind of pinpoint how it's suddenly become really embroiled in the whole contemporary political and cultural climate that is, as you say, it's bubbling up at the moment. I think possibly I was looking for some archival spoken word stuff, and I just stumbled across this speech by Jerry Voorhees in the I think the late 40s, talking about the necessity of democracy. And at the same time, I get a lot of my news from America through late night comedy. So, you know, the stuff that you see on YouTube, like Seth Meyers doing like a closer look. I don't know if you're familiar with that, where he's just constantly nailing Trump about all the shit that he's doing. And Stephen Colbert doing his monologues about what's going on. And so it's kind of a strange way of absorbing that kind of life that is in a sense it's so close and yet incredibly far away at the same time, in the sense that, you know, I'm not there, I've not lived it, I don't really know what's going on. And so it's all this kind of secondhand kind of information that's coming through and that I'm trying to somehow absorb and retransmit in a way that makes sense. I've been recording a lot of the protest stuff that's been broadcast at the moment, like the recent No Kings protests. You know, this it feels like there's material there that is really critical, but I don't know how you feel about this, but I wonder at absorbing something that's so current into an artwork, does it make it more relevant, or does it date it in some way? It's difficult to tell. I've never really grappled with these ideas, because the ordinarily the stuff that I'm making work about is, you know, it's about deep time, it's about things that have gone on prior to human habitation. So it's all new and rather bewildering for me to try and grapple with.
So just for people to have a little bit more sense of context, can you talk about Dorothea Lange, talk about the images, and just locate us a bit in the particulars and specifics of what you're referencing?
Sure. So as far as I understand it, there was an organization called the Farm Security Administration, I think, that was set up by Roosevelt as part of the New Deal, and it was to try and assist with the difficulties that were going on with in rural America during the Great Depression. And there's a lot of people from what you would call Dust Bowl America that were having to relocate to other parts of America where they could find work, and California was one such site. And in particular, there was a location in Imperial Valley in Southern California where there were these labor camps that people migrated to from, say, Oklahoma. And so Dorothea Lange and other photographers were employed by the FSA to essentially document that whole project. And so the National Library of Congress holds a wealth of these images that are basically photographs of those migrant workers. And I think there's a really famous one called migrant mother, I think, and the woman's name was Florence Owen Thompson. And that image became kind of emblematic for the Great Depression and the struggles of rural America in general. But for me, it was there were many other more powerful images in Lang's catalogue that kind of spoke to me really volubly, and I felt that there was something asked of me as an artist to kind of respond to, if that doesn't sound incredibly pompous and hubristic.
Well, you could look at that in different ways. You could look at that as a look into the past. You know, at this moment, as an individual, you're fascinated with these photographs, which is a great thing. I think in the contemporary context, where everything's expected to be flashy and fast and consumable and a reel on a social media website, and these photos harken back to a different relationship to images also. I wanted to pick up on the point you mentioned about internal migration in the United States, which so many of these photos speak to that, right? And so you're talking about also a totally different technological context in regards to communication technology at that time. So people will be moving, let's say, as you talked about, from the central part of the United States to this California or other places too, and you're totally, in that context, would be totally cut off, you know, in any sort of quick way to communicate to the people you've left behind, or even to have visual reference points to those landscapes. And of course, this can make you think about how much migration continues to fuel the U.S. economy, but it's a different type of migration. And I think that what you highlighted in telling the story of the photographs also speaks to an important layer of U.S. labor history that actually speaks to, I think, a possibility of understanding and solidarity. A lot of people's families did migrate internally in the United States.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think partially that's what generated these resonances with what's happening at the moment in America. This concern with immigration and with indigeneity and rights to land and to work and to that nebulous thing, the American dream. And it's, yeah, I think it's one of the things that spoke to me quite vividly, this idea of people being dispossessed of their land and having to essentially begin again. And that's a cycle that's happening over and over and over. And this is why, to me, it seems so incredibly cruel what's happening at the moment in America. And As an artist, you feel, is there some way to express this in a way that helps to generate more resonance and to amplify that signal and to bring things into some kind of coherence? It's so difficult because of the way the narratives are spread, and as you mentioned about social media and the way that we essentially don't really in the way that we absorb media and information, we don't tend to look beyond things that affirm our own prejudices and beliefs. So it's difficult to get contrary opinions to actually enter into any kind of dialogue.
Well, your work, Richard, demands that people take a bit more time, without putting it that way. I mean, the nature of these works are actively creating a sense of reflection, and I think the pairing with the photographs also plays with time a bit, both in terms of like the way that you're work plays out generally. You're really in the space, like you're in this sonic space for some time, but that, and you know, and then with the photos it's sort of about reflecting on time and the past, in this particular case through the Imperial Valley project. Maybe just for people listening, if you could just end by talking a bit about this project and in relation to your other broader work, that would be wonderful, and also what you've been up to, or anything you'd like to share.
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, it's Imperial Valley is something of an outlier in my broader work, which more generally looks towards the natural world and focuses on a much deeper sense of time that eclipses any idea of culture as we know it. So trying to get to a sense of geological time, of something that really the mind can't really comprehend in terms of the vast durations. And music is somehow a really powerful way of communicating that. You can somehow generate a sense of timelessness, even though the music itself might only last 10, 20, 30 minutes an album. So there's something that after 20 years, I don't really understand how that works. And the fact that it's incomprehensible to me makes me, I think, continue to do it. There's a magic in that confounds any idea of how to reduce it to simple terms. And so each time I go and make some music, I'm a spectator to something that I don't really comprehend, and I'm just there for the journey, you know. It's a wonderful thing. And so with Imperial Valley, then sort of introducing voices from the past into it, I've never done that. All my music has been instrumental. It really creates a tension that I'm deeply uncomfortable with, but I really like that sense of discomfort. And that's what I was mentioning earlier about, you know, what are the ethics and the ramifications of using, you know, an excerpt from an O King's protest in a piece of music. You know, I'm listening to pieces that I'm doing at the moment with those excerpts in, and they feel to me really powerful, but I might listen to them in 6 months and, you know, fuck knows what's happened since then, so they might have no further relevance. And so there's a part of me that thinks, you know, what am I trying to do here? Do I take a broader step back? It's, you know, the Imperial Valley project started looking at events that happened essentially almost 100 years ago, and it's kind of like that's almost like a safe distance. The dust has literally and metaphorically settled, and you can approach things with more certainty, whereas with what's happening at the moment, it's really I really don't know how to come to terms with it. So, you know, as I said, after 20 years of doing this, it feels like a different kind of art that I'm having to kind of negotiate on a day by day basis. Yeah, so that's where I'm at. I have lots of new Imperial Valley material, and I'm just at the moment trying to work out how it fits and whether it is indeed Imperial Valley or whether it goes under a new pseudonym. I'm quite keen on generating as many of these pseudonyms as I can. So who knows?
Thank you so much for chatting today, Richard. That was a conversation with artist and musician Richard Skeleton talking about his project Imperial Valley. There's four parts, and you can learn more about it at richardskeleton.net. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thank you so much to the Social Justice Center at Concordia University for supporting this project. We broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m. on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also podcasts. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.
Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent. Boom, 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 boom.